Hello, Richard here. I'm one of the guides at London Walks, and I think I can safely say that I'm in the top 10 of the longest-serving guides. So we'd have met 25 or so years ago. It was most likely on one of the walks in London. But then I decided to expand our repertoire of walks outside London. Same principle. We met at a station, but this time, instead of an underground station, it would be a railway station, and from there I would whisk you away for the day. I seem to remember I started with Windsor and Eton, and Oxford, and Richmond and Hampton Court. That one I loved, because we arrived at Hampton Court by boat, having had lunch on the river. And in a funny sort of way, I'm going to talk about the River Thames and boats today. But firstly, can I ask you a question? Do you like auctions? Not the grand ones like Sotheby's or Christie's, where the pictures and objects are often museum quality, but the local auctions, of which there are many here in England. I love snooping about, often under the tables, where you find boxes of bric-a-brac. Recently, I found a collection of framed views of London in a battered old cardboard box. They were mostly in a poor state and rather dirty, but I rubbed my thumb over the glass of one of them, and to my astonishment, a very fine engraving of London in the 1700s appeared. I quickly put them back, making them look as decrepit as possible, and wandered on. Lot 127 soon came under the hammer.
A box of miscellaneous prints and pictures. Who will start the bidding at £20? Now, come along. I'm sure there must be something in there that would grace the walls of your esteemed houses.
There was silence in the room.
Very well, then. Can I say £15?
A voice behind me shouted out,
I'll give you £10.
Very good, sir. £10 it is.
Now, come along. Do I hear £12?
Oh, yes, from the lady on my left. And so it went on. I only joined the bidding at £45, and after a few tense moments, as the lady on the left kept flapping her catalogue, the hammer finally came down at £68 in my favour. When I got them home, I realised there were about a dozen framed engravings and various other prints that were just lying at the bottom of the box. Sadly, most of these had suffered from being left in a damp place. I was imagining a shed somewhere or the back of a garage. I picked up the first framed one, and with a damp cloth I started to remove the grime of many decades from the glass. It was a picture of St Paul's Cathedral. The artist must have been on the south bank, so you see the river with numerous sailing boats, a few river taxis and a couple of rather fine barges, their oarsmen pulling hard against the current. On the north bank, below St Paul's, you can see what looks like some rather nice houses, mostly in terraces, four or five stories high, and then interspersed with these are warehouses and jetties for the boats. The scale and grandeur of St Paul's, though, really does dominate the picture. It's the sheer scale of the church, designed by Sir Christopher Wren after the Great Fire of 1666, that is truly inspiring, particularly the dome that stands aloft of the main building. But also in the picture, you see around 14 other churches, the spires and towers protruding up above the houses. Now, I don't know if you've been on our Along the Thames pub walk, but if you have, we would have been almost exactly where the artist stood, only more likely we would have had a drink in our hand, as the site now is the Founder's Arms, a comparatively modern pub, right on the river between Blackfriars Bridge and the giant structures of the power station, which is now the Tate Modern Art Gallery. Today, of course, the view has rather changed. To start with, the river is narrower because of the embankments on either side, and instead of sailing barges, you are more likely to see large motor-driven tour boats with hundreds of people on them. But St Paul's still manages to dominate our view. Just. If you look to the right of St Paul's, you will now see the vast modern office blocks of the city, And sadly, the churches that survived the bombings of the Second World War, their towers no longer appear above the buildings at all, and the more modern edifices have been built up. But if you look carefully to the left of St Paul's, you can still see the wedding cake-like spire of St Bride's Church, just off Fleet Street. Now, I'm looking closer at my picture, and I realise just how many chimney pots and stacks I can see. Remember, every room that had a fireplace needed a chimney pot on the roof. These have been meticulously drawn. I would love to know who the artist was, but I'm afraid no clues on this picture. The next picture I cleaned up showed St Paul's once again dominating the sideline. However, with this one, your eyes are drawn to the river, where there is some form of pageant taking place. Large, highly decorated barges are in the forefront, surrounded by smaller boats with many people in their finery. I was intrigued. A few years ago, I'd been to a wonderful exhibition at the National Maritime Museum in Greenwich about the River Thames, and I seem to think that a picture like this one must have been exhibited. I found the catalogue, and lo and behold, one of the main pictures was the very one that I now hold in front of me. It was by the artist Canaletto. But my engraving was only about a third of the original picture, but I must say, the most interesting parts. The painting is entitled London, the Thames and the City on Lord Mayor's Day. So one of the gilded barges must be the Lord Mayor's, and the others, which were splendidly carved and gilded with their flags and pennants waving, it must have been the livery companies that accompanied the mayor on this progression down to the city of Westminster. The originally took place on October the 29th, so I had a date for the picture, but I wondered what year the painting was done. Canaletto was born in 1697 and by the early 1720s had established himself as the leading provider of Venetian views to the many English patrons who had visited the city, often on their grand tour of Europe. However, the War of the Austrian Succession, which spread into Italy in 1742, rather discouraged potential travellers. So Canaletto decided to transfer his studio to London and arrived here in May 1746 and stayed for about 8 years. One of his first commissions was by the Second Duke of Richmond, who asked him to do two pictures with views from his house. The Duke of Richmond was rather an interesting fellow. His father was the illegitimate son of Charles II, good old King Charles often gave titles to his offsprings, legitimate or not. The house where he lived now was in Whitehall and was actually built on the former bowling green of Westminster Palace at the southern end of the Privy Gardens. Canaletto's first painting for the Duke was entitled The River Thames and the City from Richmond House, and the second one, Whitehall and the Privy Garden from Richmond House. In the former picture, you see Westminster Bridge, which was actually being built at that time. This bridge was only the second crossing of the river after London Bridge and was unquestionably the greatest engineering come architectural undertaking of the time in London. Many of Canaletto's wealthy patrons were fascinated by this, so he decided to start work on a number of other paintings featuring the bridge, but this time the painting is from the east side. One showed the Lord Mayor's procession, and it was painted in 1746. And in 1747, an engraving was made of this painting. Just to sidetrack slightly, engravings were developed as an original art form in the 15th and 16th century, but it was not until the 1700s they really took off. Prior to the invention of the camera, engravings was the best way of reproducing pictorial content. So all of Canaletto's paintings are likely to have been reproduced in this way. But my engraving was not showing Westminster Bridge, and when I looked at the original painting, it was much larger in scale. So Canaletto must have decided to do various paintings of this most important event. The first mayor of London was appointed over 800 years ago, originally by King John, in a desperate attempt to bring the city to his side in the growing conflict with the northern barons. Things didn't really work out the way he planned. In 1215, King John's disastrous reign was falling apart. His armies were retreating in France, he was completely broke, and his barons were on the edge of an open revolt. Soon he would be forced to sign the Magna Carta, Britain's first statement of individual rights and freedoms. At the time, this meant, first of all, the rights and freedoms of his barons, which he continued to dispute until civil war finally broke out. John died of dysentery while marching his dwindling armies from one besieged city to another. London was right in the middle of the coming conflict. The merchant city was rich but vulnerable, hard to govern but easy to invade. It was squeezed by the king's taxes and frequently held hostage by warring barons, and the whole situation was becoming bad for business. For years, London had been trying to organise itself into a commune, a sort of early city state that would be able to declare its borders, make treaties, defend itself, and the king may have thought it a clever move to go along with this. And in 1215, he issued a royal charter, creating the commune and allowing the city to elect its own mayor every year. The king added a careful condition. Every year, the newly elected mayor must leave the safety of the city, travel upriver to Westminster, and swear loyalty to him. The mayor now has made that journey over 800 times, despite plague and fires and countless wars, and pledged his or her loyalty to every king and queen of England. They became the Lord Mayor about a century later, but it remained an elected office, and for the next few hundred years, the Lord Mayor of London was by far the grandest position to which a commoner could aspire. The original journey was mostly by barge on the river, and by the 16th century, the show was firmly established as a major entertainment in London. To start with, it occurred on the 29th of October, but in 1751, it was moved to the 9th of November, when Great Britain replaced the Julian calendar with the Gregorian calendar. So I wondered which date my engraving depicted. Today, the procession still takes place, but now the Lord Mayor is seated in his official coach, which was actually built in 1757. And if you happen to be in London in the autumn, any autumn, it's well worth coming along to watch the festivities. Anyway, back to my picture, which sadly is in black and white, so the lush colours have to be imagined, but nothing can take away the sheer spectacle of the painting. You can almost hear the crowd shouting. You can smell the smoke coming from the cannons that have been fired, the laughter, the shrieks of the children. And yet, crowning it all is the calming influence of St. Paul's Cathedral. As to the date, I'm sure now it was 1547 or 1548. So it must still have been on October the 29th. Well, that's all for now. I do hope you will listen to more of our London Walks podcast, and perhaps you'll join me again sometime, and I'll tell you a little more of what I found in my box of delights, especially one of the pictures of Ranelagh Gardens, which was one of the notorious pleasure gardens of London in the 1700s. Keep well. Bye for now.